1 Corinthians chapter 16. Right, let us look at 1 Corinthians chapter 16. We shall read 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verses 1 to 4. We are continuing our studies on the local church in Corinth, its problems. And this series of studies started way back in 2013, that's about 3 years ago. And for these 3 years or so, we have been just looking at the problems in the church in Corinth. Now, I have gone into detail in this study because these problems in Corinth are more or less the same even as the churches in the world face today. And not only that, even a local church like Allen Glades Gospel Center faces. Because these are problems that have been present all the time and will continue. And we need to be aware of them. 7 April 2013, I was here to deal with chapters 1 to 5. Then, for the next 3 Sundays in 2013, we dealt with chapters 1 to 10, completing 10 chapters that year. 2014, we went on to study chapter 11 and also chapter 14. That would be in 2014. We left out chapters 12 and 13 because chapters 12 and 13 were integrated in chapter 14 when we dealt with the public participation of the members in the assembly. Then, finally, this year, the last time I was here, we dealt with chapter 15. So it has taken us almost 3 years to complete this study of the problems in the church in Corinth. Today, we shall deal with chapter 16, verses 1 to 4. So let us read verses 1 to 4. Now, concerning the collection for the saints, as I have given order to the churches of Galatia, even so do ye. Upon the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by him in store, as God hath prospered him, that there be no gatherings when I come. And when I come, whomsoever you shall approve by your letters, them will I send to bring your liberality unto Jerusalem. So, this morning, we shall deal with the collection for the saints in Jerusalem. A quick recapitulation regarding the problems that the church in Corinth faced. Now, you remember in chapters 1 to 4, Paul dealt with problems regarding divisions in the church. There were those who said, I am of Paul, I am of Cephas, I am of Apollos, I am of Christ. These divisions must not prevail in the assembly of God, for all are one in unity. And therefore, Paul denounced them. Is Christ divided? Second, chapters 5 and 6, we dealt with the problem of morality. Chapter 5, there was a case of incest. Chapter 6, there was a case of Christians bringing one another to court. Paul says this should not be done. For the case of incest, that person who sinned must be cut off and sent out into the realm of Satan. For those who bring one another to God, this should not be so, because we are to judge sinners. How can we allow sinners judge us? Don't we have among us those wise enough to judge us when we have problems? Chapter 7 to 10 dealt with social difficulties calling for discretion. Chapter 7, should a person get married or should a person remain a virgin? Chapter 8, there's nothing wrong in eating food offered to idols, but when you eat food offered to idols and stumble a weaker Christian, then there is something wrong. Paul says, if meat makes me to offend, I will eat no meat. Because he says, if you stumble a brother, then it is better that you have a millstone hung around your neck and you'll be drowned. Of course, chapter 9, there were those who criticized Paul, who judged his credentials. And chapter 9, Paul had to come up to prove that he was indeed called of God. Chapter 10, we have those who had communion in the Lord's table and yet had communion in the table of demons. And Paul said, this must not be so. And so, going to chapters 11 to 14, Paul dealt with some ecclesiastical disorders. All things in the church must be done decently and in order. And then he established the headship of Christ in the church. Chapter 15 dealt with the resurrection. Very important. This had to do with doctrine. Today, churches do not believe much in doctrine. They believe that, you know, so long as Christians behave well, Christians can unite together, can show love, that's all. Doctrine is not important because doctrine divides. It's love that unites. It is not true. Doctrine is important. And that's why those Christians in Corinth, they were not sure what would happen to those of their loved ones who had died. And would they rise up again? Therefore, the doctrine of the resurrection concerning the body of every believer. If Christ had risen from the dead, so all those who are in him will also rise from the dead. Okay, we agree. Then what about the kind of body that they are going to have after the resurrection? And Paul dealt with that also in chapter 15, verses 35 to 38. Finally, today we come on to money. Money is very important. The giving of money to the Lord, how it ought to be done, who should do it, and why it ought to be done. And so, for the next few moments, we shall deal with this important principle of giving. What is this giving? And then, of course, in chapter 16, verses 5-24, which we shall deal with next week, we shall then deal with Paul's final farewell to the church in Corinth. And with that, we hope that we will have a final farewell too, because we have been at Corinth for 3 years already. So with that, just to remind you that the first 6 chapters, Paul dealt with the problems that were reported to him by the house of Chloe. But from chapter 7 to the end of the book, Paul was dealing with problems that the church themselves realized were existing in their assembly. And they posed them to Paul. And that's why we have the word concerning. The word concerning gives us a clue as to the problems that were brought up by the church to Paul. For example, in chapter 7, verse 1, we read, now, concerning the things whereof you wrote unto me, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. The relationship between man and woman, what would it be like? They also wrote concerning virgins. Should a person marry or not marry? And Paul said, I have no commandment of the Lord, but if you are not married, you can serve the Lord better, because you do not have the responsibility of caring for your husband and your children, or for that matter, your wife and your children. As concerning therefore the eating of those things that I offered to in sacrifice unto idols, do not stumble the weaker brother. Then, now concerning spiritual gifts, brethren, I would not have you ignorant. There were people who abused the use of spiritual gifts, and Paul gave certain principles that must be adhered to in chapter 12. And now today, he dealt with again a problem that was brought up by the church in Corinth. What about the collection of gifts for the saints? What should we do with them? How should we deal with them? And the final problem that the church brought up was with the person of Apollos. Remember earlier in chapter 1, some were saying, I am of Cephas, I am of Christ, I am of Apollos. Now, this problem of Apollos surfaces again. So we shall see what Paul would do with this problem next week. So, let us start. The collection for the saints. Now, it's very, very important we understand this morning, and as every Sunday morning, the collection bag goes round. What do? You take out whatever you have decided from your pocket or your purse or your bag, and you put in to the collection bag as it comes round. When you do it, what is your attitude? When you do it, what is your motive? When you do it, what is your purpose? Why do you do it? These are the important questions we shall be asking this morning. I'd like you to understand this from the very beginning, that as the bag comes to you and you put in that gift into the bag, that you are not giving to charity. Please note, God is not a charity. You don't give to God charity. God need not have your money. God does not need your money. Why? Because Psalm chapter 50, 7 to 15 says that he owns a cattle on 1,000 hills. He owns everything. Hear, O my people, and I will speak, O Israel, and I will testify against thee. I am God, even thy God. I will not reprove thee for thy sacrifices or thy burnt offerings to have been continually before me. I will take no bullock out of thy house, nor he goats out of thy folds. For every beast of the forest is mine, and the cattle upon 1,000 hills. I know the fowls of the mountain, and the wild beasts of the field are mine. If I were hungry, I would not tell thee, for the world is mine, and the fullness thereof. God is not dependent upon charity. Don't get under the impression that you are giving to God, and therefore you are giving to charity. God needs your money. No, God does not need your money. God owns everything on 1,000 hills. God owns the world. God owns you. What is important that we should remember is that you are not giving to charity. On Saturdays, I go to Jirotong, and I see a number of beggars there, and even priests there on the roadside, asking for alms, asking for money. And what do people do? They just take the money out and give. Do they care to whom they give? Do they care to find out more about the person to whom they give? Have they decided beforehand why they want to give? No, because they were giving charity. Charity. Now, when we give to the Lord, it is not giving to charity. It is partnership with God. Now, concerning this chapter, chapter 51 of Psalm, there's a little chorus which I learned when I was in Sunday school. I like it very much. He owns the cattle on 1,000 hills, the wealth in every mine. He owns the rivers and the rocks and the rills, the sun and the stars that shine. Wonderful riches, more than tongue can tell. He is my father, so they are mine as well. He owns the cattle on 1,000 hills. I know that he will care for me. What a great consolation. I have this on the slide because I was tempted to sing this chorus to you. I dare not. Otherwise, you have a bad impression of this song. Lovely chorus. I do not want to spoil it. You can get it from the internet. And those who know this, I'm very sure there are many here who know this. Ask them to sing to you, not me. All right, let me emphasize this. You are not giving to charity. You remember, every time you give to God, it is a partnership. It's a partnership in giving, a partnership with God. That's what it says there. God owns everything. But God is so gracious. God even invites us to be partners with Him, to do what He can do alone by Himself. So with your giving, the work, the program of His keeps on going, continues. You are a partner. That's why we read in Philippians 1:5, Paul said to the Christians in Philippi, "You are partners with me in the gospel from the very beginning." Partners with me. So let us not forget that when we give to the Lord's work, when we put in gift into the bag that passes round every Sunday, when we give a gift to the missionary, we are partners with the person. We are having a fellowship. We are having a fellowship. We are partners with God to provide the necessary things that that recipient needs, and we are in fellowship with that recipient so that we would like to know more about what that person does with the money that we give. Charity is, I give, I don't care what you do with the money. Up to you. Fellowship is, when I give, I want to know what happens to what I give. I want to know the person who receives the money, what he does with it. I want to know the money and what the church uses, how the church uses it. I want to know. That is why there is needed an accountant, an accounting of the funds at the end of the year or whatever it may be. You don't just give to an account and then after that you finish with it. Why did they give? They gave their fellowship with the saints in Jerusalem because the saints in Jerusalem were poor. In fact, in Acts 11:27-30, Agabus the prophet had come and had told the saints there, soon there will be a famine. And true enough, a famine came. And the Christians there were very, very poor. And so other assemblies had to help. Secondly, because of persecution. Acts chapter 8, verses 1 to 4. The saints in Jerusalem were persecuted. And you know who was a culprit? If you read Acts 8, 1 to 4, you'll find that it was Saul. Saul, whose name was converted to Paul later on. Paul was a culprit who persecuted the church. He was a persecutor of the church until he was converted on the road to Damascus, and he became a preacher of the church. Paul was the one. But now he said, you go and help and have fellowship with those who are poor, with those who are persecuted. So we must know about them, and it's the responsibility of the church to bring the needs of these groups of people to the church so that the church can have fellowship with them. If the church cannot help, it's a small assembly, they don't have enough money to help the others, then have fellowship with other churches, other assemblies, so that you can combine together and make that giving meaningful. For example, Paul told the church in Corinthians that I have already gone to the churches in Galatia. In chapter 16, verse 1, I've gone to the churches in Galatia. I've given instruction to them what to do. Join them. He also gave an example later on when he wrote to the Corinthian church in the second letter of the churches in Macedonia. We shall deal with that later on, when they gave so much of what they had to the work and to the poor in Jerusalem. And so, if you find that you do not have enough, then you combine with other churches, other assemblies, and help out in the project. Now, what about today? Today we see that there is great poverty in the world, all over. Everywhere there is a need for money. And many of these people are poor as a result of natural disasters, earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, tsunami, and so on. And as a result, many of them were poor. And those of you who are familiar with the work of the Christian Missionary Missions Trust, CMCT, you will know how they have been helping the poor in India, and so on. And here there's the fellowship that we have with them to help the poor. We cannot go there, but we can extend our hand of fellowship with them, together as partners with God, to supply them in our fellowship with them. So, no difference between partnership and fellowship. Recently, there were pictures that came out of people who were poor because of earthquakes and volcanic eruptions and so on. And there was disaster all around in that country. There's a picture of what the place was before, the place after. And I'm referring to what happened in Nepal. All right, we have a work there, Kathmandu Christian Center. Do we know about it? If we do not know about it, then whose responsibility it is to let us know? We should know about it. And we should help. These are some of the Christians. Many of the Christians are poor, and we need help. They are now, at this moment, during winter time, they cannot go back to their homes. They are afraid of what would happen again, earthquakes. And they had to stay outside in the open, living under tents for 1-2 months already. And as a result, they had to depend upon others to help. Homes gone. How would you like it? You know, when I was reading all these news, I was thinking to myself, today I'm living very comfortably in my home. What happens if there were earthquake or tsunami? And suddenly, my home, my house was just swept away. And the next day, I have nowhere even to go to. I have nowhere to go to. So, just imagine the condition and the feeling of these people at this time. But not only poverty, but also persecution. Do we realize that Christians today in the world are greatly being persecuted? For example, 75% of victims of religious persecution worldwide are Christians. Do we know that? Each month, 322 Christians are killed for their faith. 214 churches and Christian properties are destroyed. 772 forms of violence are committed against Christians each month. But we don't know that. We do not read about that. We don't hear about that. We are not interested about that. We are more interested in making sure that that money that we have is used to buy a branded car, a branded watch, and we drive out in comfort and so on. These people need your help. We need to have fellowship with them as partners of God to help provide for them and to help them. Today, do we realize that in the Christian world, there are a lot of Christians being persecuted, especially between the 10-14 window, 10 latitude and 40 degrees latitude. All those regions colored in red, they are greatly being persecuted, and many of them have died. Many of them have been driven away from their homes. And those in the orange colored regions, the countries there are hostile towards Christians too. And they have got restricted worship imposed upon them. We know of this familiar picture that has come about of how Christians, of course, not all are Christians, but a few might be Christians, and they just were martyred, beheaded, and thrown, their heads thrown into the sea. And young people were being trained to just kill people. Can we imagine that? And how are the young people of Christian churches today being trained to defend for their faith, to stand up for their faith? And these people, young people, are standing up for their own faith to kill and to persecute all these Christians and other people of other faiths and so on. And so we ask ourselves a question. As we see all these natural disasters, as we see all these calamities, Where is God? Where is God? Now let us remember this. Looking back to Acts chapter 8, when God allowed persecution to come upon the church, the Christians scattered all over, fulfilling the commission given by the Lord Jesus Christ to the church. And you shall be witnesses unto me, first in Jerusalem, then in Samaria, and in Judea, and Judea and Samaria, and unto the uttermost parts of the earth. And as a result, we find after chapter 8, the Christian church spread far and wide. And today it has reached us. So, God has a reason for all these calamities and these persecutions. And today, it is a fact too, that in the Middle East, we find that the Christian church is growing. Growing very fast because of the persecutions. But unfortunately, in our prosperous country, Christianity is not growing as much as it should, although we know that definitely underground there is a work going on. All right, that's how God works. Now, let's go back to the collection of for the saints. The procedure, principles in giving. How should we give? What are the methods we should use? And so on. The period to give, when? The first day of the week. Let there be no collections when I come. The first day of the week will be Sunday. Note the change. Christians, the Jews in the earlier years, they met on the Sabbath day. But when these Christians, when these Jews became Christians, they were no more keeping the Sabbath day. They kept the first day of the week. And so it would be expected that on the first day of the week, the Christians would gather together for worship. Sunday would be an important day to come prepared. Let us come prepared. Please do not come on a Sunday morning when the bag passes round. Just put your hand into your pocket and dig for any spare coins or anything you can spare and just take it out and just put it in. You need to have a purpose. We need to just see the Christians, all Christians, coming prepared from the home with the gift in their pocket. And when the bag comes, just take from the pocket and put it in. But not to start taking out and start, whether I have blue notes or red notes or green notes or yellow notes or orange notes, and take out, well, beautiful colored notes, but the least denomination, and put it in. That's not the way. You need to have a purpose. Let every one of you, everyone, giving in partnership with God is an involvement of every Christian. It is not only the church responsible, but every Christian need to give unto the Lord. And the purpose laid up for by him in store, that there be no gatherings when I come, laid by him in store, comes from the word which means treasury. Now, from young, when I became a Christian, that will be over 60 years ago, 70 years ago, nearly 70 years ago, I started from that very age, when I was a young Christian, a Lord's Fund. And I have been keeping the Lord's Fund until today. Every year, the money that I receive goes into the Lord's Fund. And that fund will be used completely for the Lord's work. And of course, in my ministry and as fellowship with other Christians. So that when there is a request for funds, there's no need to say, oh, I have no money, because the Lord's fund is always there. And it will be good for everyone. It says, let him lay by him in store a fund, a treasury, for him to resort to when he needs to use the money. Every man, according as he purposes in his heart, let him give. No compulsion, no forcing, as you purpose in your heart, in your partnership with God, you give. Giving should not come under personal pressure. All of you must give. Today we find many churches on the major part of the services demanding, give, give, give. No. So much so that even they have got credit cards that are already prescribed, so that you come in, you just slide your credit card on the machine, and then whatever is already supposedly to be a tithe of your income is deducted. This is not the way. This is not the way. Paul says, I speak not by commandment. I'm testing the sincerity of your love by the diligence of others. You give because of your love. Your love for the Lord in partnership with Him. And I do not compel you. I do not say to you, give and you will be blessed. No. I say to you, give because you love. So how do you give? With a will of your own. Good willingly. Perform the doing of it. A readiness to will if there be first a willing mind. Let your will decide. And then decide how much you are going to give. And give accordingly. Good willingly. Not grudgingly. Or of necessity. Don't just give because it is necessary. Give because you love. Because you want to be a partner with God. Because you want to have fellowship with the person you want to give to. For God loveth a cheerful giver. Now the word cheerful is love hilariously. Now, many people have used this motto. Give. You must give until it hurts. That's wrong. It doesn't say give until it hurts. It says give until you love. Love and give. Not until it hurts you. Because giving is such that you are giving to the Lord and you are not giving to charity. However, give generously. You cannot say to yourself, I'm poor, I cannot give much. The Lord is not asking for much or little. The Lord is asking for your heart. How much you can afford, you give accordingly. You don't give beyond what you are able. No tithing. Tithing was demanded for the Old Testament Levite priest, because they were inheritance unto God. They had no other source of income. And so the people in Israel had to support them. But here is different. Those who give to the Lord's work and to the Lord's workers, missionaries, and those who serve the Lord, they give because they want to have fellowship with them. Not because out of consideration for charity and so on. Give graciously and lovingly. When you give, don't hope to get back. The more you give, the more you will be blessed. No. The Lord Jesus Christ said, it is blessed, more blessed to give than to receive. You give out of a heart of a love to just give. But not that you may get back. Not only that you may get back, but you may get back more. The more you give, the more you are blessed. That is not the principle. That is not the principle. You give because you have been blessed so much. And the more you give because you realize that you have been blessed so much more. And therefore you give back more. That's all. But not with the hope to get back more. Because that is not what the Bible teaches. Graciously and lovingly. The word liberality comes from the word grace. It's the only time when it is translated in this way. It's grace. Giving to those who do not deserve and to whom and from whom you don't get, you have no desire to get back. Just as the Lord Jesus Christ. He was rich, though he was, and he became poor, that we who are poor might be rich. We can never return to the Lord Jesus Christ what he had given up. We cannot. So, we are to give without hoping to get back more blessing, but because we are greatly privileged to be partners with God in fellowship with those whom God wants to provide for. So, how much are we to give? As God has prospered him. It's not a matter of tithing, as I say, as God has prospered you. The more you feel that your life has been blessed, the more you feel that the Lord has prospered you, the more you give. If you have received less, you give less. God is not insulted. even 2 mites by the widow are more than the thousands of coins that the rich man could give. 2 mites make the woman, the widow, richer than the other rich man. It is accepted according to that a man has, and not according to that which he had not. As it is written, he that gathered much had nothing over, and he that had gathered little had no lack. If you have much, you give. Good. God bless. If you have little, you give. And you won't lack. So those who give will not have much, will not have more. The more I give, the more I have. No. The more you give, whatever you need, God will supply. God will make sure you have. The less you have, the little you give, you will not lack. Because what you give, you will not feel the lack. God works in such a way that God treats others all as equal. The priority in giving, and that's a great difference, why I say giving to God is not a charity. Because 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verses 3 to 5, they first gave their own self to the Lord. If you're not prepared to give your own self to the Lord, that giving is of no importance. It's just giving to charity. You won't give yourself. I don't bother. I don't care to read about what I give to. I don't care to know to whom I give to. I do not bother much about what the gift does for the other person. I don't bother much. Now, you want money? Yeah, you are. I can afford it. I give you. That's how not the way to treat God. That's not the way to treat God. God gives you and me the honor to give, so that we may share the blessings he gives to the others. The participants in the giving, chapter 16, verses 3 to 4. Whomsoever you shall approve your letters, them will I send to bring your liberality unto Jerusalem, and it be meet that I go also, they shall go with me. Management of funds. Now this in particular is to the church in Corinth, and the church where we are. That when you see the funds, what do you do? What do you do with the funds? Firstly, no private dealings concerning giving. You are not allowed. Paul does not himself do it. Money given and put into his account. No. Money put in and put into a person's account in the church. No. You cannot do that. Today, we see what happens when we see a lot of accusations and allegations against people who receive money and put into their accounts. That is not transparent. With God, money must be properly managed. So, no private dealings concerning giving. There must be presence of witnesses. And that's why there need to be a treasurer and one or two witnesses to witness. And that's why we find that in modern day living, checks and so on are signed by more than one signatory. There must be at least two or three signatories so that the leaders know what comes in and what goes out. It is not to be diverted into a person's account and that person uses it for his wife and send him to US to learn dancing to testify for the Lord. That's not the way. Money is to be accounted for. No personal solicitation. In other words, the person with whom you have fellowship, he doesn't go around, please help me, please give me funds. And that's why you see a great difference between the missionaries connected with our assembly and with other churches. Missionaries connected with our assemblies never stand up here and ask for money. They don't ask for money. Even if they are short of money, they will trust the Lord. They ask the Lord, but they will never openly ask, look, I need to be funded. I need to be funded. Please give me. No. You know, the Lord works in wonderful ways. I have been giving gifts to various missionaries. Let me give you one simple illustration how the Lord provided. I was on my way to Indonesia for a mission trip, and I was bringing along gifts from the assemblies. By the way, every time I go out for mission trips, I will collect gifts from the missionaries, but I don't touch them. They will always be in the charge of a member of my mission team. And then with that, I will be the one to hand the money over to the missionary or the mission group. When I was in Indonesia, I gave this gift that was collected for Mr. Andrew Cowell. He was a missionary in Indonesia. I just met him about 2-3 weeks ago. He was in a hurry to go to Singapore. He had no time to open up the envelope containing the gift. He just said, thank you to me. When he was in Singapore, he wrote to me. He said, Mr. Ang, I just had time to open up your book, your gift. And as I opened up, my eyes swelled in tears. Why? Because the amount that you gave me is the exact amount that I need to send my children to school. Without that money, I was already thinking, before I went to Singapore, taking my children out of that school because I could not afford it. But that amount that he gave me just met the demand for the school fees. And I tell you this, this is not the experience of one person. This is the experience of many missionaries I know, including myself. How the Lord has provided in so many, many ways. Many, many ways. Missionaries in our assembly, we don't ask for money. I remember Mr. Peter Ferry, who told me, as a young missionary then, that he had no money to even buy milk for his son. And he had to say, Lord, forgive me. I have to break the piggy bank of my son in order to get the money out to buy some milk for him. But I will pay it back later on. And the Lord provided. The Lord provided. So these are things. And perhaps at this juncture here, I would like to thank all the assembly here and individuals who had fellowship with me in one way or another. Thank you very much for all the years of this fellowship. The Lord bless you. Now, we have dealt with the collection for the saints. Chapter 16, verses 1 to 4. The next part will be chapter 16, 5 to 12. The coming of Paul and his colleagues. We have no time. That one we'll deal with next week. Continue. So may the Lord bless us as we, hopefully, we may have a better understanding of what giving is, in contrast even to what is being practiced in many churches today, but more still in contrast to what our country is going through at this moment. May we always be true and faithful to the money that we handle. Paul would never deal with money himself. We always let the others, they will be the witnesses to deal with the money. And so we must ever, ever be transparent in our dealing with gifts from God's people, in partnership with God, in fellowship with others. May the Lord bless you.